Hello, and welcome to The Squeal, PIC Swine Management Podcast, featuring in-depth conversations on topics that matter to you. PIC is the global leader in swine genetics. At PIC, our goal is to make our customers the most successful pig producers by providing them with the best genetics. We know our business success depends on yours. Biosecurity, part two of a three-part series with Pipestone's Dr. Joel Neerum.
My name's Joel Neerum. I'm a veterinarian with Pipestone Veterinary Services in Pipestone, Minnesota.
And PIC's Dr. Andrea Pitkin and Jess Waddell, discussing the transfer of knowledge from the practice to the production staff.
I'm Andrea Pitkin. I'm with PIC on the Health Assurance Veterinary Team.
Jess Waddell, also with PIC Health Assurance.
One of the things that has been a recurring theme here at PIC in our conversations today is how PIC takes into account the capabilities of the operation where they're trying to help. Talk about that from biosecurity. I mean, is there a hierarchy of biosecurity issues if you go into a less than optimal operation related to biosecurity? Where, how do you start? I mean, I assume there are conversations that go on, but what's the hierarchy of it? What's the approach? What's the attack? What's the plan of attack as we find an operation like that?
It's a good question, Ned. I don't know. You start with the most glaring opportunities, the ones that are low-hanging fruit, the easiest to fix, so they can see that process or that progress immediately, and then work from there. As the cost of failure increases, the higher you go as far as the more redundancy you put into the process. But you start with the easy stuff, making sure their quarantines are long enough, the diagnostics are completed before we bring semen into the farm, and then work from there.
I think it's easy for farms to understand if you have a dirty trailer back up to your farm, and trailers are just easy to pick on, but that's a big risk event, you know, unloading, loading animals, having that there. How is that any more or less of a risk? Say that trailer shows up once a week versus you have 15 farm staff that all 15 are taking two showers, showering in and out every day, or bringing in lunch. If you have 15 people bringing in a lunch, I mean, that's 30 events every day of something crossing the clean, dirty line versus a trailer that shows up once a week. So I think that there's definitely higher risk things, or, you know, the low-hanging fruit is where you want to go first, but I don't think it should be too far off that you push in other areas as well. I mean, as, you know, Dr. Neerum was saying, anything that crosses from outside to inside really needs to be evaluated and looked at, and how are we bringing this into the farm, or how are we having it exit the farm and have confidence that it's clean.
It can be a complicated question to your question about where do you start, right? You're at a farm and it's like, okay, there's a whole bunch of stuff here that needs fixed. And there's the low-hanging fruit, which is a great approach because you fix the things that are easy, right? Easy, quote unquote. But then there's also certain things, to your point, Dr. Pitkin, where there's a way different risk level, right? And so you have to address both of those, because farm staff will look and say, well, yeah, we're addressing this low-hanging fruit risk right here, but even they're smart enough to know that the biggest risk is over here. And if management hasn't decided to allocate the capital or the other resources that are needed to fix that one, it's pretty hard to get buy-in, right? Again, so it's all about buy-in of the staff. It's all about the culture. And so it becomes a more difficult sort of endeavor than what it would seem at face value oftentimes. At least that's been my experience. One of the ways that we would describe this is biosecurity is a ground war. It's trench warfare. It is not calling in an airstrike with some B-52s and dropping bombs and blowing up the enemy and going away, right? It's It's all about in the trenches every day. It's a ground war. It's boots on the ground, and you don't win it just like that. And so it's about a commitment. It's about resources. It's about changing the culture. It's about being committed for the long haul. And too often, I think human nature is, let's call in the B-52s and drop some bombs and fix this and fly away. And that isn't how you, I think, long-term protect a farm.
I think you made a very good point with the people on the ground. They know where the deficiencies are. So if you start there and ask them what the glaring holes are, they know. And then typically if it's someone else's idea, the buy-in, it travels a lot faster. And so you can make a lot of headway in a hurry, and you can help explain the why in the process, and then it really comes together pretty quick.
The other thing that we found is that it isn't just about rewriting the protocol and throwing some money at the problem. It's about a long-term commitment, and it's about follow-up to the farm. And so I believe very strongly in an auditing process that helps support the farm to make sure that once we're back on the road, that we stay on the road. And it's not auditing in the sense that we're going to go out and do a gotcha kind of thing, right? We're going to catch them doing something wrong. It's really about a long-term approach to supporting the farm to help them make sure that they're executing all of the protocols all the time. Because these farms today are complicated. There's a lot of technology. There's a lot of work that gets done every day to take care of pigs and to perform at a high level. And so their sole focus every day, 24/7, isn't always biosecurity, right? And so the support we can bring as veterinarians, as health professionals, as other folks that come to the farm is to help make sure that we've got a scorecard that keeps everybody on the road.
Well, unfortunately, we have a lot of turnover. So to your point, continual auditing and continual follow-up that processes are being done is, you know, a lot of times could be just an innocent, well, I'm new here and I don't know, I haven't been trained. And so definitely need auditing. You know, completely agree that it is not to catch you in the act. It's not to point the finger and try to find you doing something wrong. It's to help support and make sure that we're doing everything that we can right.
What's an auditing procedure look like?
I have my biases. To me, the audit is observational. Well, first of all, the audit has to fit the protocol, has to fit what the expectations are. So you can't audit people that when they don't know what the rules of the game are. So there has to be a very clear protocol, as has already been stated. The staff have to be trained on that protocol. They have to know what the expectation is. And then to me, the audit is more focused on going out and observing whether or not the protocol is being followed. It isn't going out and asking people if they know what they're supposed to do, because they generally always know what they're supposed to do, but they aren't always doing it. And so the audit really should be focused on, are we doing what we say we're going to do? And so then there should be certain criteria that are established, whether that be looking at the sanitation of the various critical access points to the farm. That to me is a key area that can be audited. It can be looking at some of the other activities that often need to be logged or recorded that this was done. For instance, bait rotation as part of the rodent control program at the farm. It's a very easy thing to have a checklist that someone checks those bait stations at whatever time period is appropriate, and then they sign off on that, right? You can audit that sort of thing. If I ask them, they'll say, yeah, we're supposed to check the bait box, right? So it's those kinds of things. And I think the other key then is determining what are the critical things that have to be done. What are the most critical things? You could argue that the bait boxes aren't the most critical thing that I should audit, but it might be whether or not we are doing everything as it relates to quarantine and testing of incoming breeding stock. That might be a little higher level. Or it might be observing for sanitation and following the correct procedures for shower and shower out of staff members, or whether or not the correct procedure is being followed for the disinfection and quarantine of incoming materials to the farm, supplies, etc. Those would be places where I would focus an audit just to make sure that the right processes are being followed.
I think a really good process is show me how you brought semen in this morning, or having the people that are actually doing the task demonstrate it right there in front of you. You may not get to see the process every time you're making a visit, but you can use props and have them show you how they did it. And a good example of that is the lunches. If you're using a double bag process, you can have a little demonstration right there for everybody.
I think when you do an audit, you intuitively know what's higher risk and what's lower risk. And maybe I'm being unfair or mean, but I think that in a sense, even though we know, like you said, rodent bait is probably not as high a risk as, say, your trailer washing process, but I'm not going to tell the farm staff that. I'm going to say this is biosecurity, all aspects, and I want them to think that the rodent bait is just as important as how we're washing, even though I know, you know, we've got different levels of risks on either of those. And I think that helps promote the biosecurity culture, is that when you, again, you get into that mindset of, you know, I'm trying to think of another process. The double bagging, or shoe covers, or washing your vehicle before you come. Those are all small aspects, but they're all still really important to, again, setting the mindset.
One thing that some farms will do is incentivize people with respect to passing the audit. And I know of some farms or production systems that based on the performance of a particular farm team on an audit, they'll get a monetary bonus. And sometimes that is an effective way to stimulate people to do the right thing. Sometimes there's negatives too, where you like post the results of all the audits so the entire company sees who's passing and who's not. And so there's varying ways to use audits and to sort of lever them a little bit, right? Right or wrong, that's what some people do. I think there's pluses and minuses to that, but definitely can inspire people in the behavior that we're asking for sometimes.
Dr. Neal, who is responsible for audits? Who do you think drives that?
My bias is that an audit should be conducted by someone that is not within the reporting chain of command necessarily of the individuals being audited. Third party is what I would say. That's my particular bias. The example I often give is particularly with related to trailer cleaning. So it's good to have the person washing the trailer inspect the trailer, but a real third party audit is somebody else coming in from the outside to inspect the trailer, and someone that doesn't care if we have to rewash this trailer again and delay the movement of pigs by 2 hours or longer. Because if it's the truck driver, he wants to get on the road to go pick up the pigs and get moving, right? He's not incented to have his first incentive is to get his job done, right? If it's the production guy, he might be the same way. I got to get these pigs going and I don't want to wait and we're not going to. So to me, it's somebody that doesn't care if the truck wash staff walks off the job today. It's someone that doesn't care if we don't wean the pigs as quick as we want to and it's going to disrupt the activities of the farm. It's got to be someone whose sole focus is this trailer is clean and it will not be a risk to infecting the farm.
I think everybody visiting the farm, so from the owners, production managers, everyone has to be looking at the scorecard, the defined processes every single time, because if someone of status sees a process that isn't correct and doesn't correct the people doing the process, it only validates that process or demeans that process or devalues it for the future.
Observation was mentioned earlier. Are cameras okay? Do you use those? Is that a way to see if those critical areas are being maintained?
There's more and more cameras being put on farms today. I do know that. It's not something that we've used a lot historically to monitor biosecurity. I think that it will be a practice used more and more. I think today, oftentimes, cameras are being put on farms simply to let folks that don't have a farming background be able to see what's happening inside a farm. I think that's a great thing for society, for the, you know, the consumer, is to see what's happening within a farm. The problem with cameras is you have to sit and watch the tape. And so nobody, you know, has that kind of time, right? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I agree. More and more cameras are coming into farms, and I think that technology's allowed us to be a little smarter with them, that they're set up to motion. So if you're monitoring a room, to your point of not having to sit there and watch, you know, 24 hours worth of tape, it doesn't start recording until it sees motion, so you can at least tailor that down to an event that you want to see, or did someone follow the process or the protocol. I'm back and forth on cameras. I think that they could help us understand, but there was a pretty significant research study that was done, and I believe it was the poultry group, where they had cameras in a lot of their farms, and what they found is for the first few months, people were very, you know, oh, I'm going to follow this, I'm going to do this. They, you know, nose to the grindstone, were doing what they were going to do. But then over time, it's like they didn't care anymore that they were being watched, and it went back downhill again to not following protocols. So I don't know that cameras are completely the answer to get compliance, but they definitely can show us if something occurs, if they're recording at the right angle at the right moment.
I think you're exactly right. I've heard that very same perspective, in that you put cameras in, they're not a great compliance tool, because for the first couple of weeks, they'll be aware that they're there, someone's watching, I got to be very, very careful. And then I think it was Dr. John Dean, actually, that was working on a project with me years and years ago. He wanted to put cameras in a farm that I was working with. And I was like, what do you mean? We're not going to see anything. He's like, oh, yeah, I know. He says within a couple of weeks, they'll be right back to their old habits. And that's exactly what we found.
That's Pipestone's Dr. Joel Neerham, along with PIC doctors Jess Waddell and Andrea Pitkin. Whether you're tuning in for the first time or you're a longtime listener, take a second to subscribe to The Squeal. It's the easiest way to stay up to date with the latest podcast episodes. Just search for The Squeal wherever you listen to podcasts. If you're already a subscriber, visit your phone settings, turn notifications on, and you'll never miss an episode. For PIC, the international leader of continuous genetic improvement in swine breeding stock and in world-class technical support to the global pork supply chain, I'm Ned Arthur. Thanks for joining us.